And greetings, welcome to the Dividing Line. Well, as long as we continue to have net access, I don't know how long that's going to last. We're very apologetic, not that there was anything we could do about it. 8 phone calls, 46 hours, all to just activate a single modem. I think there's a strike. Well, you know, I even suggested to you that the Walking Dead thing started in Atlanta. So, and since we were waiting on Atlanta to just do something as simple as, you know, assign a modem, you know, get it working, I was really concerned that maybe possibly, that was what was going on. But right before we get started, do you see what I'm sending you now? Can you see that? Okay. This says, getting ready for the Dividing Line with the family. So you want to. Yeah. So there we get there's some of our listening audience right now getting ready for the Dividing Line with family. That'll teach them to post selfies. No, I appreciate that. I'm glad we have at least somebody listening out there. And I worked hard to grab that, just in time, for the program here. All right. I've got so much stuff, and I know something's going on in San Bernardino and death, destruction, mayhem, and, people on the loose. And, there are many evil men in the world. And they will do evil things. And, but I don't know anything about it. I'm not a news reporter. And to be honest with you, to be perfectly honest with you, we probably won't know anything truthful about it for days. So, you know, maybe tomorrow there will be something to say. Maybe some news will come out. Otherwise, who knows? Who knows? I don't know. But, I do need to get to this. I was going to do something maybe a little edifying, a little more positive, because there's so much negative stuff out there. But we've got a lot to get to, and I'm going to be gone. Well, it's not really going to impact the Dividing Line. I only leave Friday and get back on Sunday, so it's not going to be. But it's a lot of work for me. By the way, I will be in St. Charles this weekend again. It'll be the 15th year, but not in a row. We missed last year. And nobody there, I think, complained, because I was in Ukraine last year at this time. And Van Lees, the pastor there at the church, also goes to Ukraine regularly. And so we all have a heart for the Ukrainian people. And so they didn't mind that I was off teaching. That was the time when they had all the power outages and, you know, posted pictures of me teaching. Yeah, theology by candlelight. Yeah, that was a year ago at this time. So I will be there, and believe it or not, this is the first time I'm doing an entire seminar on homosexuality. I mean, I've done debates, I've done it as one topic amongst other topics, but I think this is the first time it's just going to be the subject of homosexuality. So if you're in that area, it looks like the weather's going to be great. Well, depends on how you define great. Normally I go to St. Charles to get into the holiday spirit, get some, you know, exposure to, you know, 17-degree temperatures. I sort of got close this morning. To be able to do this at this time, I had to ride early this morning, before sunrise this morning, and I saw on my computer in front of me, which I have a computer on my bike, Garmin 1000, if you want to look it up. It's the best cycling computer out there. It really is. 29.7 degrees Fahrenheit, which is below freezing, of course, for those of you outside the United States. And so I was only doing about 18 miles per hour. Once you get down below about 45, my muscles just are like, really? The older I get, the more it's that way. And so I was only doing about 18 miles per hour. I looked up the wind chill thing. And so the wind chill at 18 miles per hour is 17 degrees. I wasn't looking at any of the people driving by because they were probably looking at me like, what are you doing? It's cold out here, early in the morning, and you're riding 63 miles. Yeah, that's weird. But I did it all for you. I did it all because I needed to get that done because I'm not going to be able to. I'm going to be out of town. I do plan on running in St. Charles. I did get a text from someone in St. Charles that says that's illegal in December. So we'll see if that's the case. But in other words, the weather's going to be nice there. It's supposed to be highs in the 50s, which, you know, lows in the 30s. So if you want to come down, that's what we're doing this weekend. I saw a video, and it's fascinating. I saw this first, said, got to deal with this on the dividing line. Got to deal with this on the dividing line. Then this morning, another video, and the two of them together, interesting contrast. I am deeply concerned by the lack of thought that I have been observing in amongst Christians on Facebook, Twitter, blogs, videos, etc., etc. I'm sorry, that's all it is. It's a lack of thought. It's a prejudice. It's a bigotry. It's a bias. It is simply not appropriate for Christians to engage openly and without apology in double standards. And yet that's exactly what we're getting. People all of a sudden have decided that I'm soft on Islam. Yeah, tell that to all my Muslim opponents. I'm sure they'll chuckle rather loudly at that, but I'm soft on this. Why am I soft on this one? Because I dare to recognize that just as there are differences of viewpoints amongst Mormons, there are even, believe it or not, differences of viewpoints amongst Jehovah's Witnesses. Not much, but it's happening more and more. There are liberal Catholics and conservative Catholics and Catholics in the middle. And because I dare extend that truthful observation that is founded in reality, founded in truth, to Muslims, I'm soft on Islam. In fact, I was even accused of being an apologist for Islam. Wow. Though I should be fair, that person took that tweet down. Now, the problem is Tweetbot doesn't know that. Once it's there, hey, once you hit send, you can take it down all you want, and it doesn't matter. The world, it's there. But I did appreciate that. And I would like to sit here and say, I just don't get it, but I do. I get it. There are a lot of folks who were right with us when we were talking about the Mormons, because there aren't that many Mormons, you know. When we're ripping and shredding on some confused Arminian, you go get them. Let's have a little more Radio Free Geneva there. But when we dare be consistent and apply the exact same standards in recognizing the reality of the fact that there's not just one monolithic Islam. I mean, come on, folks. Who do you think they're killing? I mean, most of ISIS's victims are Muslims. Hello? Yet, notice how many times you've got the bombings at mosques. Who do you think's doing the bombings? Other Muslims. The primary victims of the rise of militant Islam are other Muslims. So you've got the Sunnis killing the Shiites, and the Sunnis and the Shiites both kill the Ahmadi. The Ahmadi don't kill anybody. Which by the way, and I haven't talked to him about this. I haven't had time to. My earpiece is driving me insane today. I haven't had time to. But I did see the video this morning that Nabil Qureshi put out. And I was intrigued by it. Because one of the things he said was, this is true Islam. Well, that's not what his Islam was. He was Ahmadi. And as he knows, the Ahmadi are killed by the Sunni all the time. Persecuted, driven out, and the Ahmadi are peaceful people. But, of course, the Sunni and the Shia don't believe the Ahmadi are Muslims in the first place, which is another issue. But isn't that an illustration? I mean, Nabil would say he was truly a Muslim, but he was Ahmadi, so he would include Ahmadi amongst the Muslims, and therefore those Muslims don't do these types of things. So they're, again, it's just a simple fact that a lot of us recognize, I mean, when you actually get to know Muslims, and by the way, I would say 90% of the criticism has come from people I know would never take a second to witness to a Muslim in the first place. Just never do. They don't know any Muslims. Or if they do, it's from a long ways off. And it's real easy to do the put them all in the same category as long as you don't know. You know, as long as you don't know them by first name or something like that. That's easy to do. You know, I get that part. But we're simply making the distinctions that have to be made. We're being consistent. When I go into a debate, I want to debate the position of the person that I'm actually debating. And so I want to know where they're coming from. That's why I want to be able to listen to things that they've said. That's why it's difficult for me to go into debates with people. Why I'm not sure where they're coming from, because now I'm going to have to listen even more carefully and try to ask some questions before I can even, you know, really begin to interact. But this is what we've been doing for years. And now all of a sudden, well, okay, it's one thing to do it with those other people, but you can't do it with the Muslims, or you're a Muslim defender. You're soft on Islam. Of course, one guy blocked on Twitter, his handle was Islamophobe. Well, there you go. There is such a thing as Islamophobia. I'm now seeing it. There it is. It's a bigotry. I put some videos up. I didn't cue those up, but I put some videos up on Facebook. And I think someplace down in Texas, there was a community meeting about somebody wanting to build a mosque. And, oh, my, this big guy gets up. Like I said, roid rage is a bad thing, and that's what this was. And he's just yelling and screaming. And when the poor guy who's making the presentation just tries to interact with him, you shut your mouth. I know every Muslim's a terrorist. There's no reasoning with that. And then I put up the picture of the guy following the Muslim woman to mosque. He's wearing a mask and carrying an AR or whatever it was. You know, he's in his camo, blah, 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 blah stuff. Probably couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a bazooka. But anyway, and I'm like, this is ugly. Big man following woman down the road we look at ISIS and we go, these people are disgusting, violent, vile, nasty people. And so let's act like them. Let's show them how to do it. And I'm like, this is what Christians are supposed to do. And if you dare point this out, well, you're just for the Muslims taking over. It's like, really? I am? Maybe I think from a Christian perspective, there's a different way to deal with this. Maybe you need to change their hearts. What do you think about that? The bombs don't seem to be doing it. Maybe there's another way to do it. Maybe it's the gospel. I'm sorry, if you've been listening to this program for 10 years and you haven't gotten that part, you have not been listening very well. And yes, I'm upset about it. I don't like having to block people because they haven't listened to a single word that I've said for 10 years and thought they were. What? What do you want? You want to talk? You're talking to me? You're talking to me?
You know, it struck me over the weekend. I was watching some of the
I did not strike you over the weekend.
Back,
what are you talking?
Back and forth. And it struck me, it's like, if Islam is the way it's being depicted by these people, how is it that you go into these mosques, go into the places that you've gone, and not get torn limb from limb? Do they think that you walk in there with an entourage of bodyguards?
No. I'm the useful idiot. I'm the useful liberal. I think I'm the I'm
well.
The,
if
there you go.
If the way they are depicting this group. All these people are the same. Useful idiots would get torn limb from limb.
You would
I mean,
think
there's
so.
No way you would.
You would think so. I don't know.
There's just no consistency here whatsoever in the thinking. No.
I know.
Again, we have the critical thinking issue. They're just not doing it.
No, not on this subject. It's all emotions, all emotions. And Christians, I've said it before. I'm not going to take the time to go through it again, though I may have to go through it again. The reality is the scriptures command us to think with discipline. We are to have the mind of Christ. We are not to have the mind of the world. And that means we don't think like the world. That's not an option for us. And yet there are many people doing it. Let's illustrate it. Yeah, he needs the herbal tea today. I didn't get a chance to brew up any of my tea today. So that may be
that's
part
definitely
of
got you out of kilter.
I've got my warmer thing over here, but nothing to warm on. I just got some water and yeah.
I went back and forth on one of your posts with someone over the weekend, and they were basically saying,
"Oh, I did see that. Yeah,
the imams need to report to the FBI who the terrorists are in their mosques." And I'm thinking, you know, if Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh were to sit down next to you in church, would you have any clue?
Yeah.
You wouldn't.
I know.
So how are they supposed to know these things? Do you really think that the mosque is right up the street from us, that the two guys that went after the thing in Texas came from? Do we honestly believe that the other people in that mosque had any idea? I haven't seen anything proven. Nothing.
No, and with what's going on today and with what happened at the Planned Parenthood thing, you know, okay, the guy at Planned Parenthood was just simply completely whacked.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, this guy's a nut. I mean, he will end up in a padded cell for the rest of his life. There's no question about that. But everyone's trying to turn it into a Christian thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying. He's some type of a Christian, you know, extremist. And the Planned Parenthood thing is about making me about to explode too. Anyways, we're getting far afield. Let me play these videos. Let's start with the first one that came out. The first one I saw. It's a spoken word video, just under 5 minutes, put out by I think Talk Islam. And I'll try to remember the various things that I've thought. I've thought of too many things to comment on it, but I want you to hear what this individual is saying. And I want you to think about when you see him, what do you think? What's your first thought? Is it fear? Anger? Do you want him tossed out of the country? Do you want to see his mosque closed? What are you thinking? And can you even hear what he's saying? That's the question. Let's take a look at this, and then we'll make some comments about it.
That has nothing to do with my prophet. Please just stop it. It doesn't make any sense. That's not the message he sent. That's not what he meant. That's not why he came. So you can claim as much as you want to, but I assure you the man I follow was not the same. See, I know a man who forbade the cutting down of a plant, who even spoke against those who had burnt an ant. So why is it that I simply can't understand how we claim to follow the same man? I mean, I know a man who forbade us from harming the innocent, saying he who does so would not only be prohibited from paradise, but he would not even smell its scent. So please tell me how what you're doing has anything to do with the message that he sent. This is the man who forbade us from even scaring cattle with a knife, saying you have no right to let the animal die twice. And when he was asked for advice, he'd reply, "Don't get angry, don't get angry, don't get angry," repeating it thrice. See, I know a man who called to patience first, even to those who had treated him the worst. And when he was asked to invoke Allah's wrath, he said, "I was not sent to curse, but rather as a mercy to the earth. Matter of fact, the entire universe, meaning everything that was made." See, this is a man whom the clouds would rush to shade, a man to whom the trees would sway and the birds would flock to seek his aid. For they knew he was a man of justice, a man who would never betray, a man who could be trusted even by those who had wanted him slain. See, Anas bin Malik served him for 10 years, and not once had he heard him complain. that he would never get angry for himself, but only for Allah's sake. And he never responded to evil with evil, but rather he pardoned and forgave. But had he been harsh-hearted, the people would have ran away. So what is it that we still don't understand when we claim to follow Islam, yet we fail to follow this man? I mean, I know a man who was so caring and compassionate, who said that there is a reward in serving all things that are animate. In other words, everything that breathes, whether it be the animals, the trees, and every single human being. I mean, if Allah called him Rahmatan Lil Alameen, how dare you call him anything else that contravenes? See, this is a man who said that the Muslim was he who is soft, simple, and lenient. A man who taught us himself to be cautious from falling into extremism. See, he was never given two choices except he chose that which was easiest. Not for himself, but for his people and their convenience. See, I know a man who advocated for the freedom of the slaves. A man who taught us that the Muslim is the one from whom the people are safe. Not only from his hands, but even from the words that he says. See, this is a man who would never mock, mimic, nor ridicule, nor would he ever publicly rebuke an individual. This is the man I follow, so forgive me if this sounds unusual. But the man I know was so much more handsome, so beautiful. A man who taught kindness to the neighbors, who taught us to serve others without expecting back any favors, to spread peace to those we know and even to the strangers, to walk with humility and to simply ignore the haters. But nevertheless, I know a man who still taught us to stand up for the oppressed, from the men, women, and children who call out to us in distress. I know a man who taught us to fight for these people, but by no means does this mean we have the right to transgress. For those who oppress have nothing to do with his name. So you can say what you wish to say and continue to defame his name, but at the end of the day, I assure you, the man I follow was not the same. Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
All right, Talk Islam on Facebook is where you can find that if you want to see that at a little slower pace. All right. Now, immediately, just watching channel. I wonder if this is just for outsiders and they say different things to each other. Well, I suppose it's a possibility. Of course, if this was Ivy Connerly's spoken word about the 40 words, remember? The one that we worked with him on? And a Muslim said the same thing, what would you think? Oh man, you're awful prejudiced. If your first thought was, yeah, I wonder if they really believe that. What if what we just saw actually represents the perspective of the people who produced it? How about we start there? Instead of any conspiracy theories that this is a grand attempt to deceive us all and so on and so forth, let's start with the idea that what this young man has said actually represents what he believes. There's so many things come to mind. First thing that comes to my mind is that was not shot in Syria. It was not recorded in Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan. It wasn't shot in the Middle East at all. I don't know where it was shot. Looks like the United States to me. Sounds like the United States to me. Sounds like his accent is such that probably lives in the States. All right? Why do I observe that? Because I don't think his perspective could survive in those places. That's not to say that in a less vocal sense, there might be, and are Muslims who live in those places that would agree with him. That would take more of a, for those who are familiar with the various Islamic groups and emphases within them, more of a Sufi, spiritual, sometimes almost charismatic way of understanding and interpreting Islamic experience. There's always been, historically, those Muslims who sought a more spiritual expression of their faith than what is generally provided by the established Sharia, the Sunnah of Muhammad, things like that. We know this because we know, for example, in Egypt, there was at least one incident that I've seen reliably reported, where when Muslims were going to burn a church, other Muslims locked arms and surrounded the church and kept them from doing that. Obviously, in other places, that didn't happen. To all of my Muslim friends, and there are people who even question the utilization of that term, to all my Muslim friends who agree with that video, what do you do with the reality that that form of Islam is always destroyed by Salafi Islam? How do you explain that? There was a time when there was a much more tolerant, broad-minded, I hate term, use the term progressive because that's been stolen from us as a meaningful term anymore, just like gay has. But there was a time when there was an Islamic culture that produced art and mathematics and science. But historically, that ended up being destroyed by what we would call today Wahhabism, Salafism, the strict Quranic hadith-based and a particular method of interpreting the hadith form of Islam. So, many people, and I've certainly said over and over, I really wish we could see some debates between the leading intellects on this side versus the leading intellects on the other side. Now, you might say, well, you can't get the ISIS side because if they come out of hiding, they're going to eat a Hellfire missile. And so that's probably never going to happen. Well, possibly. But that's what we need to see. We need to see meaningful interaction. Yesterday, on a long run, well, medium run, I listened to Dr. Sheikh Yasser Qadhi addressing two things. One was a concept of universalism, or in essence, from the Islamic perspective, do only Muslims go to heaven? And then the second lecture was on differences amongst Muslims. It was at an ISNA conference. So they're related. And with tremendous fervor, at one point, Dr. Qadhi, while openly acknowledging his fundamental differences with the Shiites, very strongly condemned any Muslim idea that you could bring physical violence to bear upon someone else for that kind of theological disagreement. I mean, he was shouting like a Southern Baptist preacher. He lives in Memphis, so he may have seen a few. He was preaching. He is one of the signatories to the major document condemning ISIS. And I'm seriously thinking about trying to get him on to talk about these things because I want to get his perspective. But the reality is, Dr. Qadhi would not survive enunciating many of the things that he teaches in lands where he was once identified as one of the leading Salafi voices. In fact, I identified him as a Salafi scholar in my book, but he does not identify himself that way anymore. He once did. He lives right on that line of tension, right on that spot. And I think he's moved over the past number of years because, well, he even said at one point in the discussion that in his earlier lectures, he said inflammatory things that could encourage unstable people to do things that are actually opposed to the true spirit of Islam. Okay. Again, I know these people exist. That's why I can't ignore them, and I can't pretend that they don't exist, as some people would tell me I need to. But the questions remain. All right, there you are. You saw all these citations. I mean, that was a well-done video. You know, that was very well done. It reminded me of our video on the 40 words. You know, you've got the words coming up. It's very, very well done. But who gets to choose which of those are being interpreted properly, especially the hadith? I saw one hadith cited from a source that I'm pretty certain if I cited that source in a debate would be questioned as to its validity. And I've done more debates now with Muslims than any other group. As of the last trip, even more than Roman Catholics, I've done more debates with Muslims now. And depending on the individual, you know, some of my opponents are very consistent, very, very good in being careful about this. But others, you quote a source in the hadith that seems to be against their position, and all of a sudden it's not a sound hadith. There are all sorts of questions today. I posted on Twitter video from Shabir Ali that I saw last year, where he really took a less than mainline perspective on hadith. And the voices calling for reformation within Islam, all of them say the same thing. Whether inside or outside Islam, if there's going to be reformation, there has to be a change in the view, interpretation, categorization, and authority of the hadith. Because until that's changed, you can't get away. You're stuck. There cannot be a reformation. Cannot be a reformation. Now, did you catch something else? I hope that when you listened to what he was saying, first of all, what was your attitude toward him? I'm afraid for a lot of folks, it was automatically distrust. He's deceptive. He really wants to kill me. So for a lot of people, because of the beard, because of the kufi, the thing on the head, because of maybe a little bit of a accent, fear, dislike, but very rarely is it, oh Lord, give me an opportunity to talk to someone like this. Because I'd love to talk to that guy. I would love to talk to that guy. And you know where I'd go? You know where I'd go? Were you thinking about that? Did you think about, man, if I had an opportunity to talk to someone, what openings is he giving me to the gospel? What openings is he giving me? A couple years ago, I was in Charlotte Airport, and I found a shoe shine stand. The only time I ever get my shoes shined is I figure help that guy out and helps my shoes last longer, too. Some of those guys do a great job. And they look better when they're done than when you bought them, actually. And I've got a new pair of shoes, and I'm hoping to find a good... There used to be one guy in St. Charles I'd go to. died of a heart attack a few years ago. I went to this thing, the sand was still there, and it was a different guy, and when I asked, he said, yeah, and he told me, he was like, oh, man. Anyway, I found this shoe stand, and I saw the guy's names, like Muhammad or Abdullah or something like that. We ended up having a great conversation, but he gave me all the indication I needed to know what direction I needed to go with him, to leave him with something that would absolutely be the most effective thing to speak to him and maybe to be used in his life. You know, I'm seeing stuff in the channel that's not only distracting, but again, sad in many ways, coming from Christians. But he gave the opening. Did you hear what it was? Did you catch it? I know a lot of you haven't, you know, you weren't around when I first started really emphasizing Islam, and as I was learning myself and as I continue to learn, you know, I was going through Sheikh Yasser Qadhi's stuff. He sent me his 16 CD series, Light and Guidance, and I listened to it a few times, learned so much, and that's why I've got a lot of respect for him. And one of the things that just caught me was listening to these men. You see what happens when you have a holy God, a revealed law, sin, a clearer picture of hell than is presented in Christianity. I mean, as far as the details and the suffering and everything else, I mean, it really draws a lot from medieval Christianity. But anyway, but you don't have a mediator. You don't have a mediator. And you saw what happens in Sufism, in people who've been influenced by a Sufi spirituality. What happened? Did you catch it? You see the exaltation of Muhammad? The birds would come to Muhammad, and the clouds would rush to shade him. And he would condemn people for burning an ant. You know, those narrations are there. And if you want to construct a filter to read the hadith in that way, why do you think, you know, people wonder, why did you take the time to read all of Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim? I mean, that was hundreds of hours. Why do that? You've got to understand the character of that material. And you can create a filter to let that kind of stuff through and make Muhammad into, well, someone that sounds strikingly like Jesus. But the problem is that filter has to filter out a whole mess of other stuff that doesn't fit that paradigm at all. At all. I mean, I didn't bring it in here with me. Oh, by the way, just in passing, I've talked about this. We're going to be talking some more about this. This is causing the new study Quran, new translation commentary, causing big waves. We're going to be looking some more at that. Anyway, I didn't bring the book in here, but in the video that I shot last week, I held up one of the really uber expensive Brill books I have in my library. On the military campaigns of Muhammad. What do you think? On the military campaigns with 580 pages, something like that. The military campaigns of Muhammad. Those didn't come through in this. The beheading of the Jews after certain battles, that didn't come through in this. So there was a very strong filter functioning here. I'm thankful for the filter. You don't have to fear that guy. Okay? You really don't. But the question is, where'd you get that filter? How do you defend that filter? How do you say that is Islam? Because he was... Did you know something? That wasn't for us. Oh, okay. It was for us maybe to observe. But who was he talking to? He was talking to fellow Muslims, saying, we ain't following the same man. Now, if you think he's just fooling around, well, he's putting himself in a lot of danger if he's just fooling around. That's what it was for. That's what it was for.
It struck me, just watching it, that how many people over the last, 14 years have been calling for Muslims to denounce Al-Qaeda and denounce all of this stuff. And here we have, I'm watching
as soon
this,
as they
like,
do,
not only is this guy doing that, he's doing an excellent job.
And they're, liars. They don't mean it.
Yeah. So he can't win for losing, I guess. I don't know, but...
No, you can't.
I thought he did a first-rate job of saying, what you're doing is not what I believe.
Yep.
And that's what we've been calling upon them to do.
And as soon as they do that, they're not the real Muslims.
I
can understand the frustration of someone who puts themselves out there on the line to do this, and then they either get ignored. I mean, Hannity ain't going to talk about something like this. Or they get, you aren't a real Muslim. You're not a real Muslim. Now, let's provide the, there's a lot more I could say. The point being this, let me finish this point. The picture that was given of Muhammad is one that can be, I think, my opinion, very successfully challenged as to balance, given even the material that Sunni Muslims in general would share together. And this is where the divisions are coming from, because you have to start again doing something with what you accept as sound hadith and not sound hadith to be able to change fundamentally the picture of Muhammad, because Muhammad becomes, he's the best of all creatures. He's the example for all men for all times. He's the example that Muslims are to follow. And so when you can produce a book that's nearly 600 pages long about his military campaigns, are we really shocked that there are people that produce a militaristic, violent form of Islam? Those that say, no, that is not the essence of Islam. So far, the specific argumentation has been not nearly as compelling as what the other side's putting out. And so, for a Christian, when I hear someone talking about Muhammad in that way, but I'm going to be talking about Jesus. Not in the way that many people do in saying, well, yeah, your prophet was a, and then you start down the line doing all the, I'm going to make sure you don't listen to a word I have to say by insulting you every way I possibly can before I ever get around to doing the gospel thing. What a conversation like that would do would be for you to open the door, to say, you know, you were speaking of your view of Muhammad almost in the same language I use to speak of Jesus. And yet, you don't believe that Muhammad was the Son of God. You don't believe that he was anything but the final prophet. And yet, I believe that Jesus was the Son of God. I'd like to explain to you what that means, because I've met a lot of Muslims that don't understand or have a really bad idea of what they think that means. But then he said this, and now you've got a choice to go almost anywhere and open the door to invite this person to read the Gospel of Mark, to read the Gospel of John, to get that door open. They don't know, or they have not had it presented to them with the kind of open-heartedness and knowledge of Islam as to be able to make it understandable to them. If that wasn't your first thought when listening to that, well, maybe it should be. Maybe it should be. Yes, sir.
My first thought as I was watching it, and I don't know what your thoughts on this would be one way or another, but I was thinking I'd love to tell him about the Carmen Christi.
Well, yeah, that's a, definitely a place I like to go.
I would love to just, okay, you are exalting this man. Let me show you a man who...
Humbled himself.
Humbled himself, yeah, exactly, right. You know?
Yep, that'd be a great contrast. All right, so there's a lot we could talk about there. But the point is, for a lot of you, he does not exist. For a lot of you, he's a liar. That whole group. If Islam were to take over, and by the way, can I make a rather obvious observation here? Everybody's going, oh man, when the caliphate takes over, we're all doomed. And certainly, the video I'm about to show you, that's what ISIS is talking about. Our caliphate, all the rest is Hollywood macho stuff. You got to understand something. You got to understand something. As soon as they get power over almost any area, they turn on each other. That's the history of Islam. It's the history of Salafi Islam. They turn on each other. And no matter how wide the expanse becomes of their influence, there will be civil war, there will be turning upon each other. So fast that it'll make your head spin. In fact, when I play this next video, watch who they identify as their enemies, and they will include the Shiites, because these are radical Sunnis. These are Salafi, Wahhabi, radicalized, and I suppose we need to talk about what radicalized could possibly, how it could even be defined. I saw a Ben Shapiro video yesterday where Ben Shapiro says a lot of good things. Ben Shapiro is a sharp guy. But he decided to do a video in basically saying that about 60% of all Muslims are radicalized. Well, I was listening very carefully to the definitions he used to turn a population into a radicalized population. And the standard definition was believes in Sharia. Well, what's Sharia? Well, it's Islamic law. It's all the same. You obviously haven't done much study of the various schools of interpretation, have you? No, unfortunately, people don't. And I always sit back and I just want to go, okay, we just mentioned the Carmen Christi, right? Philippians 2:5-11. What's the end of that? What does it say at the end? That the day is coming when, at the exalted name of Jesus, every knee shall bow in heaven, on earth, and under the earth, and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Kurios to the glory of God the Father. Sounds like we Christians believe that someday every tongue will confess. Someday Jesus will reign over all the earth. God's will be accomplished, his kingdom established, and yet we freak out when another religion says, oh, we're going to do the same thing. You can't do that. Well, you can do that. Yeah, that's us. That's not you. See, I'm always that, I'm that weird guy that goes, you know, you sort of need to be consistent here if you're really going to produce meaningful arguments. And I know it's a bummer. Sorry, just the way it is. Just the way it is. All right, I keep saying we're going to play this. I called this ISIS Hollywood. I called this ISIS Hollywood. It's a new ISIS video, came out a couple days ago. This is the English version, obviously. And, it's a good contrast to the last one. Let's just put it that way. Let's take a look at what it has to say.
This is our Khilafa in all its glory, remaining and expanding. It was established in the year 1435 Hijri.
its leader from the tribe of Quraysh is Sheikh Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and its territory is already greater than Britain, 8 times the size of Belgium, and 30 times the size of Qatar. It's a state built on the prophetic methodology, striving to follow the Quran and Sunnah, not a secular state built on man-made laws whose soldiers fight for the interests of Tawhut legislators, liars, fornicators, corporations, and for the freedoms of sodomites. We are men honored with Islam who climbed its peaks to perform jihad, answering the call to unite under one flag. This is the source of our glory, our obedience to our Lord. We are uncompromising in our call to Tawheed. We only bow to Allah. Unlike the countless deviant factions raising their false banners and changing with the winds of Jahili politics. Yes, we are the soldiers who stopped the idols of nationalism, demolished the shirky symbols of Palmyra and Ninoa, and destroyed the site's people borders. For there is no honor to be found in the remnants of shirk and nationalism, and no difference between an Arab and a non-Arab, or a black man and a white man, except through piety. This is the glory of faith that unites us. Justice is served with the establishment of the Islamic courts, and there are thousands of masajid and schools for our cubs and pearls, where they prepare themselves to share in the great rewards of expanding this khilafah. America, you claim to have the greatest army history has known. You may have the numbers and weapons, but your soldiers lack the will and resolve. Still scarred from their defeats in Afghanistan and Iraq, they return dead or suicidal, with over 6,500 of them killing themselves each year. So while you go around cooking the facts on the results of your military airstrikes, we continue to haunt the minds of your soldiers and sow fear into their hearts, with 18 of your soldiers committing suicide each day before you even advance. And in addition to the $6 trillion price tag on your war against the Muslims, you're now too weak to put boots on the ground. You opt instead to attack us from the air with missiles, each worth $250,000, while we send your proxies to hell with 50-cent bullets. Then, there's your new coalition of devils, with Iran, Turkey, and Russia joining the fray. That's because the Millah of Kufr will always unite you together to fight the truth. So bring it on, all of you. Your numbers only increase us in faith, and we're counting your banners, which our prophet said would reach 80 in number. And then, the flames of war will finally burn you on the hills of death. Bring it on, for we echo the mighty call of our prophets. Gather your allies, plot against us, and show us no respite. Our ally is the greatest. He is Allah, and all glory belongs to Him.
أمركم وشركاءكم ثم لا يكن أمركم عليكم غمة.
There you go. There's the, you can see why I called it ISIS Hollywood. That's slick. Man, that's slick. I'm also almost wondering if it wasn't done in Hollywood. Wow. Lots of graphics, lots of pride, lots of arrogance. I mean, that looks like a Navy SEAL promo video, you know? Just going the opposite direction, I guess, but wow. Now remember, it's not Islamic, according to anybody. Or, to some people, that's the only form of Islam. You see the contrast? I mean, they talk about the prophetic method. They talk about the coffers. There was a section here. Let me see if I can find it here. Really going after the here we go. Really going after the U.S.
We are the soldiers who stopped the idols of nationalism, demolished the shirky symbols of Palmyra and Ninoa, and
okay, so here was, remember they destroyed these historical sites. And some of the things they're saying, most people just don't understand what they're talking about. The Shirky symbols. Shirk and nationalism. What in the world are they talking about? Well, remember some fundamental things. In Islam, you have the Dar al-Islam, the world under Islam, submitted to Allah. And the Dar al-Harb, which is the world at war. And so if you're in a nation that is not submitted, does not establish Sharia, then you are in the world at war. All right? And so shirk, of course, they say we stand on Tawheed. And we've talked about Tawheed and shirk many times on this program. Tawheed is the oneness of Allah. Hence, to deny Tawheed is to engage in shirk. Shirk is the one unforgivable sin. If you die as a mushrik, if you die amongst the mushrikun, there is no forgiveness for you. I've told the story many times of how Muhammad desired to pray for his parents who had died as mushrikun. And Allah would not allow him to. They had died as idolaters. They had died as polytheists. They had died as those who associated someone or something with Allah, and there is no forgiveness for that. And the fact is, there's only one exception whatsoever to that rule, and that was Muhammad was allowed to intercede for his uncle Abu Talib, who had protected him when he was a minority prophet in Mecca before the Hijra. And as a result, Abu Talib has, again, this is just according to Hadith, Abu Talib has the best spot in hell, which means he's standing, either standing in flames up to his ankles or wearing sandals that are so hot, depends on which version you read. But it's so hot that his brains boil. That's the best place in hell. And Abu Talib has it because of Muhammad's intercession. But still, despite Muhammad's intercession, there is no forgiveness for shirk. And so that's what they're talking about. And they're saying Palmyra was this temple that was a monument to the worship of false gods. And so we destroyed it because it is an offense in the sight of Allah. So anything that is offensive to Allah and a nationalism, again, if that nation stands against the Ummah, the Islamic Ummah, the gathered people of Islam, then that must be destroyed as well. And so there are explicit, specific, theological foundations to everything that is being said here. Now, I noticed that all the soldiers are well-fed, clean, well-equipped. It looks like a U.S. Army promo. Really does. Look, right now most ISIS soldiers hide in caves and are not well-fed and do not look like they just walked off a soundstage. So we know this is, again, ISIS Hollywood. But the reality is that when you look at this, al-Baghdadi has a PhD in Islamic studies. Not a stupid man. And they could, ISIS can, again, by the selective filtering of the sources, choosing what sources they're going to prioritize over others, trace their theology all the way back to the early period. Ibn Taymiyyah, huge name, great focus upon Tawheed, Shirk, they could call him as an ally. The destruction of the coffers, the killing of the coffers. Again, can you find in the development of Islamic civilization in those first 400 or 500 years, developments of traditions and jurisprudence that would place a necessary limitation upon jihad and what could be done in jihad? Yes, you can. They reject that. They reject that. That's why the Salafi refers to people who look back to those first generation, the first generation of followers of, they say those individuals had special insights. And so it's almost like saying it's like going to the early church. We want what the apostles said. We want what the early church said. See, we're going to skip all this tradition to develop later. And the more moderate Muslims are saying, no, we can't skip the tradition that came along later because that is a proper development of what was originally given. So there's all sorts of questions that just haven't been as clearly delineated amongst the Muslims about ultimate authorities, interpretation of ultimate authorities, what is an authoritative source, what is not, what the rules are for determining what a Sahih Hadith is, what it isn't, so on and so forth. Now, these guys, I think ISIS is made up primarily of the following groups. The knowledgeable, well-read, radicalized Salafi Wahhabi Muslim that really does believe that what they're doing is a grand jihad. But I don't think that's the majority. I think they're important. I think it's the majority. Then you've got guys who just love to blow things up, rape women, and behead people. Just nasty, arrogant, evil reprobates who are always looking for some way to get to do those things and to justify their actions. And I think you've got people who have gotten caught up in it and they have no other way out. They have no other way out. Out of fear, out of simple survival. It's a mess over there. It is a mess over there. Now, I could not follow it up, but I saw one report that said, for example, that at least one of the Paris terrorists owned a bar or worked at a bar, one of the two. And the Muslim who mentioned this was going, yeah, it's a great Muslim there. Yeah. He may be yelling Allahu Akbar, but what good does that do if you are living in such a way that your life is completely inconsistent with what you're claiming your motivations actually are? Now, before you go, oh, who cares? Isn't that what we say about the Planned Parenthood shooter? I mean, people have found that he was all over deviant sex sites and we go. Now, there are other places where he was in, and always in all caps, makes me wonder if he was King James only, but all caps, telling people that if they disagreed, because I guess he was really into the apocalypse is right around the corner. Then again, he could have just like The Walking Dead or something, I suppose, same thing, but he would type in all caps. And he was saying that Jesus is returning. And we look at that and we go, it's not a real Christian. There's no evidence that this person has any concept whatsoever about what repentance is or godliness is and so on and so forth. And the Muslim says, and if these guys who do the jihadi stuff are visiting prostitutes and getting drunk and doing, there's no evidence that they are either. And that's their argument. And I can see why they get angry when we go, well, that works for us, but it's not for you. Sorry, I'm sort of sensitive to those things. So, massive contrast. Massive contrast. What do we do about it? What do we do about it? Well, there is really only one thing that can be done about this mess, and it's to change hearts. And that's really up to God, and He uses us. And I can guarantee you one thing, every single Muslim who has ever truly come to know Jesus Christ has not become a jihadi. So it seems like primary power we have, something called the gospel. And it seems to me that for a lot of Christians, that's just not a good enough answer anymore. You need the Rangers. You need Delta Force. You need the SEALs. You need more cruise missiles. Hey, how about Putin? Hey, ooh, yeah, there you go. We've got the wimpy leader, so let's get the macho man in it. That'll do it. All that stuff about not trusting in horses and armies and all that stuff in the Bible. Hey, we're talking about real politics here. We're talking about the real world here. That says a lot. That says a lot. Over the years, I have said to people on this program over and over and over again, my conclusion is that the sources from which Islam derives its self-understanding are too inconsistent and incoherent to provide a meaningful resolution to the problems that we're facing in the world today due to groups like ISIS. And a lot of folks just tuned out, just sort of said, why he's talking about the Muslims again, I'm going to do something else. But here, in these two videos, you see exactly what I've been talking about from the beginning, illustrated. Because both of them claim to be drawing from the Quran, from the Sunnah of the Prophet, from the Hadith, and coming to diametrically opposed conclusions. So, I don't know what to do about ISIS in the sense of, I don't get the feeling they do much in the way of debates. You know? Who knows? Maybe we get one to call in on a unidentified satellite line or something like that. IRC. Yeah, nobody. IRC, what's that? Even NSA doesn't know what IRC is. Nobody uses that. Oh, okay. What would be wonderful to see would be to see representatives of those two extremes engaging each other in a meaningful debate. But sadly, the ISIS guys generally do their debating with violence, and so that's probably not going to happen. Probably not going to happen. Though there are Salafi Muslims, I've engaged many Salafi Muslims, that would, if they were really honest, they may not be able to be honest, but they're really honest, they would defend at least ISIS conceptually, if not in specific actions that they have undertaken. But I've said to many of my Muslim friends who stand against ISIS, okay, that video was great, but how about taking on some of their arguments? How about taking on some of their key texts and demonstrating forcefully, it was about 2.5 years ago, Sheikh Astrakhani linked to a seemed like a nice little old man, giving a lecture on why ISIS was wrong. And it was just sort of like, it was just like, oh, and they're putting stuff out like that, and you think you're going to win that battle? Where are the books? Where are the widely published books that say, here are the fundamental errors of ISIS, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, demonstrated from the Sunnah of the Prophet, from the Hadith, from the Quran? Where are they? They need to be out there. We need to see them. I know that you guys exist. And I know that you have a position and that you can defend it. You just need to be doing it. You go, well, they get millions of bucks. We don't get nothing. All right, well, yeah, they're selling oil. And so they've got Spielberg working for them or something. I don't know. But, yes, sir?
It seems to me that if that young man in the first video can do what he did, how much did that really cost?
Yeah, I don't know.
He, I think, did more than I've seen since 9/11. Even Zudi
Gabbard. Well, as far as it's speaking to our type of world, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, the videos of little old men in funny hats rambling on about this Hadith source, that Hadith source, yeah. Though those books need to be out there, too. For the Muslims. But anyway. So I wanted to get to that because, look, I think it's vitally important. We're going to go another 18, so it'll be a jumbo if that's all right. What? I that was what I was planning, and we'll go on from there. I did want to get to one other thing on the program today, and I know I'm forgetting a bunch of stuff. Before I do this, maybe I should just put this together with this other article, for tomorrow. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. Tomorrow, we'll at least get started with, two things. One, I sort of caught up on a number of editions of Unbelievable over the past few rides and runs. And there was one that I had seen advertised. I went, oh, that's going to be interesting. And it was the warfare model versus the blueprint model. In other words, the almost open theistic Greg Boyd, well, Greg Boyd is an open theist, though he won't debate anymore, but the open theist warfare model in heaven is the reason for evil versus what they called the blueprint model, which I could tell was going to be Calvinism, Reformed theology. And the fellow they had on from London Theological Seminary is very good. He did a fine job. If I've met him, I didn't make the connection. May have been because I was listening so fast, and he seemed to be talking so very, very quickly. Maybe if I slowed it down, I'd recognize the voice. But anyway, but some of the things that were discussed on that, some of the things that were said on that, I want to touch on because it was, again, very relevant to where we are. And then I was sent a, was this a Twitter one? I think this was a, I should start putting little notes in Evernote. This came from Twitter. This came from Facebook. So I can remember maybe who or where. Paul Copan wrote an article called Does Regeneration Precede Faith? Apparently not. It's an interesting topic, article, or title, I guess. And we'll talk about that too, because it sort of fits in with the Reformed theology part. And so we'll look at some of that tomorrow as well. But what I want to talk about in the last few minutes here, have you heard of CRISPR? You heard of CRISPR? Has nothing to do with Cain's chicken fingers. CRISPR is a gene editing tool that has been developed around the world, and it is making, it has given us the ability to very easily edit the human genome in such a way as to make the edits transferable to the following generations. In other words, CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, so it's obvious an acronym. CRISPR has given us the ability to fundamentally change the human species. Now, there has been, you know, wiser heads of the past have laid down some level of understanding that that's not wise to do. But we live in a day where the people who are in charge of these things, the people in leadership in Western countries, the people in science have been so thoroughly secularized. You know, there was a day when Christian scientists would have said this far and no farther, but you can't even raise the question of intelligent design in those areas anymore. So China doesn't care about what Western countries have said we should or should not do, and they're running full steam ahead on this stuff. There are a lot of scientists are saying, whoa, 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 Nelly, but China doesn't care. We're talking cloning, but we're also talking fundamentally, not only designer babies. I mean, that's almost easy. That's almost a given. Sure, on one level, honestly, this technology could banish an entire list of pernicious diseases in a matter of years. Just do away with them. Many diseases due directly to genetic malformations eradicated, gone. And for a lot of people, that's all that matters, is, that's great. But there's a lot more to it than that. There is fundamentally the question of what is man? And if we are merely an accident, and if we are merely molecules bumping into each other that could be wiped out tomorrow by a stray comet, then why not go for the super race thing? Why not? And see, I don't know how they've done this, but movie script writers have seen this stuff coming for a long, long time. There are all sorts of movies I can think of that have run with this theme that is now a reality. Sometimes it's the utopia situation that has become sterile and there's no more humanity and, you know, everybody's perfect and everyone's beautiful. And if everyone's beautiful, then no one's beautiful. And if everyone's happy, then nobody's happy. All that kind of stuff. There's also, I'm not sure if they ever come out and say this, but remember the movie I Am Legend? If I recall correctly, that was genetic manipulation gone wrong. And I don't think they've come out and said this, but I have a hunch that if they ever get around to it, that's probably what happened in The Walking Dead, too. Don't know, but it would be one explanation. We can all see how something really bad could happen when you start messing with the very blueprint of life itself in such a way as that what you produce will be passed on to the next generation. I mean, am I just frightened? Well, I am frightened of the fact that we are facing these issues in a world that is so firmly opposed to what is good and godly and true and just. We're facing these issues being led by people who have a fundamentally false view of mankind. Now, I don't know what that does to your eschatology. I personally would really like to see the Lord come back, like now, like really soon. Because with the Iranians getting nuclear weapons and with nutcase secularists in the West doing the designer baby genetic manipulation thing, I don't know, Tim LaHaye's starting to sound pretty meek and mild, okay, you know? So, I just mentioned this to you because this transhumanism, transcending the limitations of humanity, evolving to the next level, but not by natural processes, but by artificial processes. That's going to be a challenge. A tremendous challenge to the Christian worldview to even begin to understand how to interact with it. That's going to take a tremendous amount of insight. And I'm not claiming to be the one to be able to do that. All I'm claiming is this is going to be a challenge. This is going to really require us to think very deeply about where we're coming from and why we believe the things that we do. Keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on that. There's all sorts of stuff coming out on that, and it goes to, you know, I hear people, they'll criticize Al Mohler because, you know, I was talking to somebody, I said, yeah, I used to listen to the briefing, but after a while, you know, it's just the same thing over and over again. Well, it's not the same thing over and over again. It's just he's trying to get us to consistently apply a Christian worldview in light of a moral, ethical, social, you know, downgrade. This is not a strong enough term. Degradation, collapse, free fall, whatever terms you want to come up with. And he's warning us, he's a great resource, warning us the fronts upon which this is happening. And when you listen to that, hopefully what you get over time is, wow, if I don't prioritize my way of thinking in such a way as to recognize God's purposes in this world and what, you know, the kingdom of God, and then I'm just going to be blown about, and I'm going to be constantly in a state of worry and anxiety, and I'm not going to respond in a consistent way as a Christian. I'm going to end up responding like the world, or you know what's even worse than responding like the world? You know what's even worse than responding like the world? And boy, do we see this all the time. What's even worse than responding like the world is responding upon worldly principles and trying to coat that response with a Christian religiosity. That's ugly. It stinks. It's a worldly response that you then try to turn into something that Jesus would have done. We see it all the time. We see it all the time. You know, liberal Christianity does it. Every form of Christianity that does not take seriously the revelation of the Word of God and the highest view of what the Word of God is has to respond in that way. They'll come up with a religious response, and then they'll, or a worldly response, they'll cover it over with some peanut butter Christianity. And that stinks. I would give me, I'll quote my daughter here. From, I remember a conversation from years ago. She said, "I prefer my pagan straight up, thank you." So, if you're going to give a pagan response, just give a pagan response. If you're going to give a pagan response, don't try to blame Jesus for it. All right? Don't try to attach a nice, pretty scripture meme to your pagan response. Just, if you're going to be a pagan, going to think like a pagan, just give a pagan response. Go with it from there. And all will be well. So CRISPR gene editing tool. Keep that in mind. It's going to be it's going to be all over the place. By the way, did we hear anything back about that possible debate? Not a word yet, huh? No? Okay. All right. Turned out to be a dead end? Dead end. Bummer. Dead end. Okay, got it. All right. Just somebody who wanted to see it happen but really couldn't make it. Okay. Bummer. Yeah, look, that's... We don't even have to talk. It just sort of goes the way. It's very interesting. Anyway, all right, let's wrap this thing up. Like I said, if you're interested in getting resources on Islam, this is not that expensive.
Oh, give that title again, because we did get some inquiries. People want to
know. Yeah, The Study Quran, a New Translation Commentary, Sayyid Hussein Nasser, Editor-in-Chief, Dagli Dakake Lombard, General Editors, Mohammed Rustam, assistant editor. It's published by Harper One. Look at this. Okay, no, that's good. Look at how much text to footnote. It looks like the ESV Study Bible or the Reformation Study Bible. This makes Yusuf Ali look like it's huge. And it's coming from a non-Salafi perspective. And hence what I'm being told is there's stuff in here, and I've only had a chance to look at a few things. There's stuff in the notes, and these are believing Muslims, but there's stuff in the notes that are making some more conservative Muslims unhappy. So, wanted to let you know about that particular thing, and it's available on Amazon for less than $50, and it's very nicely bound. Super nice paper, so on and so forth. So I want to let you know about that. Thank you for listening to The Dividing Line today. Lord willing, the modem continues to live. We'll be back again tomorrow. Not really sure exactly when, but we'll be back again tomorrow. And then heading towards St. Charles. Hope to see those of you in that area this coming weekend. Thanks for watching. God bless.